Questions without notice. Give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, today we were honoured to host the President of the Philippines in this very chamber. He's here as part of the ASEAN in Melbourne next week. Would the Prime Minister advise of the significance of the summit to commemorate the 50th anniversary of the Australia-ASEAN dialogue partnership between Australia and ASEAN?
Give the call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the Leader of the Opposition for his question, and him asking that question is indicative of the bipartisan nature that is there for having the President of the Philippines as our guest here in this chamber for what was a very successful address and has been a very successful visit. There's also bipartisan support for Australia's hosting of the ASEAN summit next week. It is important that we commemorate this event of 50 years ago when we were the first dialogue partner for ASEAN, and since then it has enjoyed bipartisan support from governments of both persuasions who recognise the great privilege that we have of living in proximity to what is the fastest growing region of the world in human history. What that presents is enormous opportunities for Australia. And Nicholas Moore has produced a report, our Southeast Asia Economic Strategy to 2040, that outlines not just a general strategy for the region, but a country-by-country analysis about what can be achieved through these relationships. When it comes to the Philippines, for example, it's not just Australian investment in the Philippines, it's Filipino investment here in Australia. This week, they will open the expansion at Melbourne Port. Australia's largest container port is, of course, owned by a Philippines-based company. They also are significant investment in renewable energy here in Australia. And next week, under the theme, A Partnership for the Future, there will be not just dialogue between every single leader, with the exception, of course, of Myanmar, are all coming to Melbourne next week. There'll be a business dialogue as well, an opportunity to increase our trade and economic cooperation. There will be four themes of the conference. The overall summit theme is a partnership for the future. Those four themes are maritime cooperation, trade and investment, climate and energy, and emerging leaders. And we know when it comes to maritime, the issue of UNCLOS, as the President of the Philippines said, the importance of free navigation through the South China Sea and around our trading partners is so important. Our relationship is strong, and we regard the centrality of ASEAN as a key point of our foreign policy. Our partnership can realise a new generation of security, peace and progress as we each play a role in contributing to the maintenance of regional stability and work together to uphold the rules-based order and manage the strategic challenges which we face.
Give the call to the Honourable the Deputy Leader of the Opposition.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. When was the Minister first informed that a serial sex offender the Albanese government released from immigration detention had been charged with sexual assault, stalking, and two counts of unlawful assault in Victoria?
Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Deputy Leader of the Opposition for her question. I was informed of the arrest last evening through appropriate law enforcement channels.
The call to the member for Swan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question's to the Prime Minister. How will Labor's new tax cuts for every Australian taxpayer benefit Australians? And are there any opposition to these cuts?
Give a call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Swan for her question. And of course, the member for Swan knows that as a result of what has occurred in the parliament this week, every single taxpayer, all 13.6 million of them, will receive a tax cut in July. We want people to earn more, and we want people to keep more of what they earn, and this is what it will achieve. These tax cuts support the aspirations of all Australians, because we know that aspiration doesn't start at the top of the tax bracket. We know that hard-working Australian families work hard in order to get ahead. They work hard so their children will have better opportunities in life as well. And that is why we are supporting aspiration by giving every single taxpayer a tax cut. That's why we have legislation before this parliament to help Australians own their own home. That's why we're helping people get the skills that they need through fee-free TAFE. We promised 180,000 places, but we delivered last year alone 350,000 places. And from next year, there's another 300,000 going ahead. The Minister for Education is working hard to make sure more kids from the outer suburbs and regions get the opportunity to go to university. That's what it means to be the party of aspiration and opportunity. Now, those opposite, think that aspiration just starts at the top tax bracket. That's right. And they've said in the amendments that they've supported in the House and in the Senate, they've said that they want to go back to their form of stage three tax cuts. And they've been out there. The shadow treasurer was out there yesterday doing those doorstops, saying again, "Oh well, we did vote for it, but we're against it. We don't like it, but we did vote for it. We did vote for it." They can change the way they vote. They can't change their values. They can't change who they are, and that's why they would never have thought of fee-free TAFE. That's why they would never have thought of trying to assist people from working class backgrounds to get to university. That's why they reacted to our announcement about a change of position on tax cuts by saying they'd oppose it. Then they were going to roll it back. Then there should be an election over it before they ended up voting for it.
Order.
We are the party of aspiration and opportunity, the party of tax cuts for middle Australia, the party of home ownership, and the party of earning more and keeping more of what you earn.
The member for the Chief Opposition Whip will cease interjecting. The member for Flinders has the call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. I refer to the Minister's previous answer and ask, why did the Minister fail to use his powers to seek to re-detain this serial sex offender and protect these two Victorian women?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker. Of course, my thoughts, and I'm sure all members of this place, are with all victim survivors right now and with all those affected by these distressing reports. And I say to the member who asked the question and all members that all our law enforcement agencies, the Australian Federal Police, Border Force and the state police forces as well, are doing an extraordinary job. I express my confidence in them. Now, I want to be very clear, and I think all members will appreciate this, that I am not in a position and I will not comment on any individual case because I will not risk prejudice any court proceedings. I will not risk prejudicing any court proceeding.
Call order. Order. When the House comes to order, we'll hear from the member for McNamara.
Thank you very much, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Housing and Homelessness. How is the Albanese Labor government supporting Australians into home ownership, and what are the barriers to the support?
Call to the Minister for Housing, the Minister for Homelessness and the Minister for Small Business. The member for Barker will cease interjecting.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member for McNamara for that important question. I know that the member for McNamara has been a great supporter of Labor's housing agenda, and indeed to thank him for his support last night for our Help to Buy shared equity scheme, Mr. Speaker, that passed the House last night. Help to Buy will support low and middle income Australians who are struggling to buy their own home, save up to 40% on their mortgage. Eligible participants will only need a 2% deposit and the government will support them with an equity stake of up to 40% for new homes and up to 30% for existing homes, Mr Speaker. This means a lower deposit and lower ongoing repayments for tens of thousands
Order,
of Australians.
The Minister will pause. That's the fourth time the member for Deakin has been interjecting during this answer alone. And it's always on this minister as well. He's warned, so no more interjections on this minister, and hopefully for the remainder of question time as well. It doesn't matter who the interjection is from or who to, but we're just going to limit the interjections to assist the House. I want to hear what the minister has to say, just as I wanted to hear the question.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. After last night, we're now one step closer to delivering on this life-changing election commitment. This will be life-changing for 40,000 low- and middle-income Australians. And I want to thank all of my colleagues on this side of the House, Mr Speaker, but also some members of the crossbench, the members for Curtin, Goldstein, Indi, Fowler, Kooyong, McKellar, Wentworth, Warringah, North Sydney, Clark and Clare, who did support Help to Buy, because they understand this is about help for real people. Help for people like Gemma from Canberra. And I've quoted Gemma in this place before, and Gemma has said, and I want to quote her, "Help to Buy would give me something to look forward to, something to work towards, Mr Speaker." That's what Labor is focused on, getting people into home ownership. But the same, unfortunately, cannot be said for those opposite, and indeed the Greens, who teamed up together yet again, and they came in here last night and they voted against helping Australians into home ownership. They voted against Help to Buy, knowing that it has the backing of experts, knowing that it has the backing of the construction sector, and knowing that it has the backing of advocates on the front line of our housing challenges. Mr Speaker, over here they want to talk a lot about home ownership, but they don't vote to support more Australians into home ownership. And I'd say this is becoming a bit of a habit, teaming up with the Greens. They teamed up on the Housing Australia Future Fund to delay our fund getting up and running. That fund is now established and generating returns. And indeed, last night again, they did it again. But Mr Speaker, they do need to go back to their constituencies and they need to explain to people how they voted in this place, and particularly the member for Gippsland and the member for Fairfax, who have written to me asking about Help to Buy. I hope they're going to tell their constituents that they came in here and they voted against it, Mr Speaker. They write to me and they voted against supporting Help to Buy. You know, they're teaming up with the Greens, but this is about people. It's about your constituents. So like Gemma and Chris and Sandra, that I've quoted in this place last week, we took it to the election, Mr Speaker. It's about time those opposites supported it, and the Greens need to support it as well in the Senate.
Before I call the member for Kennedy, I'd just like to acknowledge a few people in the gallery who've joined us today. I'm pleased to inform the House that we are joined today by recipients of the Jonathan Churchgood Soldiering Award 2024, who will receive their medals tomorrow on the 123rd birthday of the Australian Army. I'm pleased to inform the House that we are joined today by His Excellency Mr Munday Kumba, the first South Sudanese ambassador to Australia, and also the Mayor and CEO as guests of the member for Durack, the Mayor of Karratha. Welcome to you all. And I give the call to the honourable member for Kennedy.
Prime Minister, your key role in Copperstring created four world-class vanadium mines and shorted Huon de Forest of Twiggy Forest wind farms. Huon's HIPCO micro-thread irrigated pasture scheme creates a protective barrier enabling the rehabilitation and flowering on what is now degraded and eroded prickly tree and pig-infested wasteland. Isn't a meeting of Twiggy, HIPCO, Stephen Miles and your brilliant and gifted Tanya Plibersek needed to turn a population of 1,000 into 20,000 owner-operator, owner-occupier, farmers, contractors and journeymen a thriving heartland?
Order. Just made it. Give a call to the Prime Minister. Order. Members on my right. The Prime Minister has the call.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. And I agree with all of the sentiments expressed by the member for Kennedy. And I add one, which is that he has played an extraordinary role in representing his community over projects like Copperstring, over projects around Huendon. I visited the electorate of the member for Kennedy to look at what's called the Big Kennedy and Little Kennedy wind farm projects, to look at the solar project driving with hydro out of an old gold mine as well that's been so extraordinarily successful. And I even visited Brave, the Hughenden pub there, with the member for Kennedy to meet with all of the locals and to have a community meeting. I risked my life by sitting in the wrong seat of someone who was 7'8" tall. Can I say to the member for Kennedy that I agree with him, and I have a long-standing interest as well in the Hughenden irrigation scheme. It is a proposal that's been developed. The Minister for Water, the brilliant Tanya Plibersek, is happy to meet with stakeholders and the Queensland Government to discuss the irrigation needs. And this project would provide around 11,000 hectares of irrigated agricultural area. The Queensland Government have written to ask how we consider funding for pre-construction activities, which we have now delivered. And I understand that the Queensland Government has recently announced a review of the Gulf Water Plan. My government will continue to work constructively with the Queensland Government and the member for Kennedy to invest in water infrastructure that considers the region as a whole. We are investing in Queensland water infrastructure projects, Paradise Dam near Bundy in Queensland, Cairns Water Security, Mount Morgan Water Supply Project, strategic planning for improving water security, additional funding between Big Rocks Weir, and groundwater improvement and water efficiency in the Lower Burdekin. We are investing in water infrastructure, which is so important, particularly with the changing climate. What we're seeing is floods, but then droughts, often in the same regions as well. We need to make sure that we have adaptation going forward as well. That's something that's understood by the member for Kennedy, and I look forward to working with him to promote further investment into Queensland water infrastructure.
The call to the honourable member for Hunter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government. With many people in regional communities impacted by the cost of living, how is the Albanese Labor government easing the burden and ensuring Australian families can keep more of what they earn? Is anyone standing in the way of that relief?
Give a call to the Minister for Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development and Local Government.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And can I thank the member for Hunter and wish him all the best on his Olympic qualifying journey this Saturday. Yeah. Like all regional members on this side of the House, I know the member for Hunter and the members who represent regional communities, we're out and about all the time at shows, at community events, listening to people in our community. We are very much a part of those communities, and it is why we are all so focused on ensuring that more regional Australians can earn more and keep more of what they earn. From the 1st of July, every single Australian taxpayer will receive a tax cut, including those who live in our regions. After the 1st of July, any Australian worker pulls out their paycheck, what they'll see is that there is more money in their pocket and less being paid in tax. An apprentice on $53,000 a year will receive a tax cut of $1,000, and a truckie earning $77,000 a year will get a tax cut of $1,604. A nurse on $73,000 a year will get a tax cut of $1,504, $804 more than that they were going to receive under the Liberals and Nationals plan. Nurses, teachers, retail assistants, casual workers, labourers, truckies, agricultural workers, the backbone of our regions, all receiving a tax cut. All of them will do better and keep more of the money under our changes from the 1st of July. Now, of course, that is all good news for Australians, and who on earth could possibly want to stand in the way of that? We know that those opposite were not really keen to support any tax cuts at all. We had, of course, Deputy Leader of the Opposition out there saying she was going to plan for it to be rolled back. We've had Senator Hume out there just in the last few days saying it's back to the drawing board. Well, read between that what that actually means is that their first instinct was to oppose Labor's tax cuts, and ever since they've made it clear that really what they'd like to do is take them away. They simply couldn't help themselves. It's in their DNA. They want to see less money in Australians' pockets. They want to see Australians working more and earning less. Absolutely,
order,
working more and
Nationals.
Earning less. Under Labor, what we've seen wages growth
members
is double,
left.
And what it averaged under the Liberals and Nationals, and our tax cuts help every single regional Australian. Australians to keep more of the money that they earn and to earn more
order.
Money as they go along. But what we've seen, of course, from those opposite is there is not a cost of living measure that they don't oppose. Whether it has been cheaper childcare, whether it's been cheaper medicines, whether it was energy bill relief. The decisions that you make in this place matter. You might go and say
order.
One thing out there in your electorates when it comes to help to buy or things like that. But what actually matters is what you do in this place to support regional Australians, and all those opposite do is say no, 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 no.
Order. The call to the Manager of Opposition Business.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. Out of the 149 hardcore criminals released by the Albanese government, how many rapists and sex offenders, apart from the one who's just been charged with sexual assault, remain at large in the community?
Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Manager of Opposition Business for his question, which is a question that I answered in the last sitting week when I informed him and informed the House that because of the strict visa conditions, including reporting requirements and electronic monitoring for many, the location of every individual in this cohort is known. And I remind him and those opposite of what the Federal Police Acting Deputy Commissioner said in estimates, and I quote, "I don't think there is any difficulty knowing where they are." Now, unlike some of those opposite, I have complete faith.
Member for Page.
I have complete faith in our law enforcement officials' ability to keep
the
us
member
safe,
for
and
Forest.
They are working around the clock to do just that. And I remind him again that we have worked to give them the tools they need to enforce the strict laws we passed in the parliament last year, including an additional $250 million to support our law enforcement effort.
Call to the honourable member for Haslach.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Aged Care. How is the Albanese Labor government investing in aged care to support older Australians and the workers who care for them?
Give the call to the Minister for Aged Care and Sport.
I thank the member for Haslach for her very timely question on the eve of the third anniversary of the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety Commission's report being tabled in this place. A report which described a sector that had spiralled into crisis through a lack of leadership, integrity and accountability. A system where secrecy had been hardwired. Australians have the right to know how their aged care system is performing. Their government has a responsibility to design and to operate a system that tells them that.
That's right.
And aged care providers have a responsibility to monitor, improve and be transparent about the kind of care that they provide. And these are three very simple principles that for too long were put in the too hard basket. That was until the now Prime Minister's 2022 budget reply, where he made a promise to Australians that transparency and accountability would be brought back to aged care to deliver new funding, more staff and better support to the aged care sector, to be transparent about how the sector is funded and to ensure that every single dollar of that investment provides better care to people. And today, the Albanese government delivers that promise by publishing dollars into care. From today, older Australians and their families can now go on My Aged Care and see how much they are spending on their care, their food, their wages and more, alongside their star ratings profile. This transparent tool will hold providers to account for how they are spending taxpayer money and ultimately give people the full picture to make informed decisions about their care. We are shining a light on the aged care sector, the good and the bad. We recognise that the majority of aged care providers and their staff are working hard to deliver high quality and safe care. That is why we delivered a historic pay rise for aged care workers to recognise their efforts in lifting the standard of care across the country. And under the Albanese government, there is now a registered nurse on site in aged care 98.7% of the time on average. That's 23.69 hours a day. Older people are receiving an additional 2.16 million additional minutes of care every single day.
Excellent.
The average sector level investment in the workforce has increased by 19%. And there has been a reduction in the number of pressure injuries, of physical restraints and of significant unplanned weight loss. We are also seeing improvements in the star ratings data, with fewer 1- and 2-star rating facilities and more 4- and 5-star rated facilities. The Albanese government has brought aged care back from the brink, and looking forward, we have to make sure that the system is capable of sustaining this progress now and well into the future.
Give the call to the honourable member for Cowper.
The Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. Out of the 149 hardcore criminals released by the Albanese government, how many rapists and sex offenders have re-offended since being released?
Give a call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you very much, Speaker, and I thank the member for his question. As I've said previously to the House, where individuals offend or breach their visa conditions, they will face the consequences. They will face those consequences, which are a matter for state or Commonwealth law enforcement agencies.
Could we call to the honourable member? Order, the Leader of the Nationals. Give the call to the honourable member for Newcastle.
Thank you, Speaker. And my question is to the Minister for Education. What is the Albanese Labor government doing in education to open the doors of opportunity wider for more Australians?
Give the call to the Minister for Education.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker, and can I thank my dear friend, the legendary member for Newcastle, for her question. On the weekend, I opened Western Sydney University's new study hub in Fairfield with my great mate, the Minister for Climate Change and Energy. It's where we grew up, and it's also where I released the university's Accord final report. And I did it there on purpose. That new university hub is smack bang on the site where I got my first part-time job collecting shopping trolleys at Fairfield Woolies.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago, 1987. Back then, this building still hadn't opened. There were still only 3 Star Wars movies. Probably should have stayed that way.
Controversial.
I'm not counting Mandalorian in that.
The minister will return to the question.
Well, those were the days. Those were the days. Those were the movies. And of course, one of the greatest albums of all time had just come out. Of course, I mean Guns N' Roses' Appetite for Destruction.
Order.
Could be the opposition leader's autobiography one day, perhaps. A lot's changed since then, but not everything. In the 1980s, the percentage of people in Fairfield with a uni degree was about a third what it was across the rest of the country. Today, it's still only about half the national average. And that's what this hub's about. That's what the Accord is about changing that, breaking down that invisible barrier that stops a lot of kids from the outer suburbs from getting a crack at going to university. And it's an even bigger issue in the regions. That's why we're doubling the number of university study hubs across the country. 14 in the outer suburbs and 20 more in the regions. And in the next few weeks, I'll announce the first 10 of those new regional university study hubs, bringing university closer to where Aussies live. It's all part of what the Prime Minister talks about, opening the doors of opportunity. We want Australians to earn more, and going to TAFE and university is part of that. Going to TAFE or going to university helps you to earn more. If you've got a uni degree, you earn an average of 30 grand more than someone whose last year of education was year 12. We want Australians to earn more. We also want Australians to keep more of what they earn. That's why the tax cuts passed this week are so important. A nurse on 75 grand will get a tax cut of more than $1,500. A teacher on 80 grand will get a tax cut of more than $1,600. And an engineer on 95 grand will get a tax cut of more than $2,000. Every taxpayer gets a tax cut, all 13.6 million of them, because we want Australians to earn more and keep more of what they earn.
The call to the honourable member for Fadden.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. On 13 February, the Minister assured the House that all 149 of the hardcore criminals that the Albanese government released were being continuously monitored. Was this serial sex offender being continuously monitored at the time he is alleged to have sexually assaulted and stalked two women in Victoria?
Wow. The call to order. Members on my left. The member for Leichhardt will cease interjecting. Give the call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the member for his question. In respect of this case, as he would appreciate, as I've already answered, I'm not in a position to comment on the individual case, but I can, of course, refer to media reporting which indicates that he was subject to both electronic monitoring and curfew as well as other strict visa conditions.
Order. 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 The House comes to order. We'll hear from the member for Holt.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Skills and Training. How is the Albanese Labor government providing real cost of living relief and helping more Australians skill up into better paid, secure jobs while keeping more of what they earn, and what has been the response?
Give a call to the Honourable the Minister for Skills and Training.
Well, can I thank the member for Holt for her question and her very strong support for the vet sector in her electorate across the country. Speaker, the government inherited a very significant skills shortage, in fact, arguably the worst in 50 years. And we've moved quickly to invest wisely in education and training to ensure we supply skills and knowledge in areas of existing and future demand. And one of the most effective means to date to achieve this end has been the remarkable take-up of fee-free TAFE places that focuses on skill shortage areas. And this includes occupations in the care economy, the IT sector, traditional trades, the energy sector going through such a significant transition, just to name a few. And I'm pleased to inform the House that 350,000 Australians have now enrolled in these fee-free TAFE courses, almost double that of the target we set ourselves after the Jobs and Skills Summit. And of course, these courses are providing skills to workers. Speaker, like any good government policy, it serves more than one end and it benefits many. It removes cost barriers to much-needed skills for students, for trainees, for apprentices, for workers. And it provides a pipeline of skills to businesses and the labour market more broadly. And in doing so, it provides more carers to care for older Australians. It provides more electricians to help with the transition of the energy sector. And these workers, in fact, all 13.6 million taxpayers, will be getting a tax cut on the 1st of July because of the actions of this Prime Minister and this government. And, Speaker, remarkably, 84% of these taxpayers will be better off than they would have been under the Liberal plan. And so, Speaker, what we're seeing here with the rise of real wages is that we're seeing workers in this country earn more and keep more what they earn. And, Speaker, I'm asked about whether there's been responses to this. Well, by way of contrast, the opposition leader has no plan, no policy, not even a thought bubble when it comes to addressing cost of living pressures in this country. Doesn't support cheaper medicines, doesn't support cheaper childcare, doesn't support fee-free TAFE. In fact, speaks may well vote in favour of the tax plan, but as we know, has spoken against Labor's tax plan. Does not support these things. Speaker, this is an opposition that is carping, whinging and has no plans for Australia's future, no plans to supply the skills to workers, no plans to supply the skills to businesses and, more broadly, no plans to provide the skills and knowledge to our economy.
Yeah. Give the call to the honourable member for Clare.
To the Prime Minister. The great Aussie dream of home ownership was once the birthright of every Australian, but with the housing affordability crisis, it's slipping away, and every member of this House knows it. My private member's bill would place a two-year ban on the foreign purchase of homes in Australia, taking pressure off the market straight away. Earlier today, neither your government nor the opposition supported it. That's no support from the major parties. Why? Why won't your government give more Aussies a shot at the great Australian dream by supporting my bill?
Give the call to the Minister for Housing, Homelessness and Small Business.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the member for Clare for that question. I also want to thank him for his ongoing interest in housing and addressing our nation's housing challenges that we do have. As I said to him earlier, I also want to thank him for his support for the Help to Buy. And in the long list of support from the crossbench, I did forget the member for Mayo, who I also want to thank for support for Help to Buy. Can I say, Mr. Speaker, we do know that Australians are finding it more difficult to get a safe, affordable place to call home, which is why, of course, we do want to invest in supply. As I have said here before, supply, supply, supply is the answer. In terms of foreign investment, while investment in building new housing is welcome, foreign ownership of existing homes is generally prohibited, as the member would know, and as we discussed earlier in the chamber. In some limited circumstances, foreign residents can purchase a home while they're living in Australia, but they must sell it or rent it out when they leave. A foreign owner's vacancy tax applies to any property if left vacant for more than 6 months. Mr. Speaker, we recently introduced into this House and is now going to the Senate legislation that will triple the foreign investment fees for established houses and double the vacancy fees for foreign investors. The higher fees for established dwellings will encourage all foreign buyers to invest in new housing developments, boosting housing stock for Australians that need it. Mr. Speaker, we want to encourage investment in new dwellings. We don't want to encourage people to be buying existing properties. We want to encourage people to be investing in new dwellings to add to supply, and that's what our change is about. And whilst I understand where the member's coming from with his legislation, as I said earlier, we're not in a position to support it because we have a lot of policies, a broad, ambitious housing agenda that will add to supply. And I've run through them numerous times in this House, Mr. Speaker, and I'd say to the member opposite, I'm happy to have a conversation with him about housing supply in this country.
Give a call to the honourable member for Parramatta.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Industry and Science. How will the Albanese Labor government's tax cuts support Australians working in STEM? What is standing in the way of supporting STEM workers?
Give the order. We don't need any sound effects from members on my right either. Give the call to the Minister for Industry and Science.
Thanks, Speaker. And I just want to thank the member for Parramatta, who's had a long-standing interest and knows full well the job opportunities that emerge when you build skills in science, technology, engineering and maths.
Member for Fisher.
And Australian STEM workers, highly sought after, not just here but world over, because our training systems, particularly in STEM, are some of the best, according to the OECD. Our government highly values STEM workers. We want to grow the STEM workforce. In fact, we want to see 1.2 million Australian workers in tech-related jobs by 2030, but importantly, we want their salaries, their wages to grow, and we want them to keep more of what they earn. And that's why we're giving tax cuts to nearly every single STEM worker. In the tech space, for example, an IT worker in Darwin earning $69,000, they're up for a $1,404 tax cut. A software engineer in Derrimut in the western suburbs of Melbourne earning $95,000, they'll get $2,054 tax cut, and a data analyst in Adelaide earning $90,000, they will get a $1,929 tax cut.
Member Casey,
now, Mr. Speaker, there is another class of STEM worker who will also benefit. I alluded the other day to a certain strategic consultant who might have been employed by the Coalition. I'm not going to go back there, but if your name's George and you're a marine biologist, then if you're earning $65,000, $4,067, he'll earn a tax cut for $1,316, and thanks to the Gen Xers who laughed at that one. Mr. Speaker, those opposite, they love to talk up the value of STEM, did nothing to tackle the skill shortages that crippled those firms needing talent. And just as we addressed the challenge, while we were pushing for tax cuts to deliver cost of living relief, what do we get out of those opposite? Oppose, support, criticise, vote for. The Liberal and National parties, they called our tax cuts an egregious error, and then they voted for it.
The Deputy Leader,
they called the tax cuts regressive, and they voted for it. They called the tax cuts small fry, and they voted for it. We come to the part of question time called, what did the Deputy Leader of the Opposition say? She went full Churchillian mode, saying, we will fight this legislation in Parliament, then voted for it. They voted, after they voted for our tax cuts, they then turn around and say it's back to the drawing board. And this is what happens. You know, the coalition speaker get jammed into a policy cul-de-sac because they stand for nothing and oppose everything. This is their constant problem. We value Australia's STEM talent. We want them to earn more. We want them to keep more. We want them to be put to work for the better benefit of the Australian economy.
Order. Reminding the House that the member for Fisher is warned and the member for Casey, after 11 continuous interjections, is now warned. So no more interjections from the member for Fisher or the member for Casey. Give the call to the member for Deakin.
My question is to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs. When did the minister inform the Prime Minister that this serial sex offender had committed new crimes against the Victorian community?
Call to the Minister for Immigration, Citizenship and Multicultural Affairs.
Thank you, Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for Deakin for his question. These are matters that are managed in the ordinary manner. Law enforcement officials advised me and I've engaged in the appropriate course since then.
Give the call. The Minister's completed his answer. Give the call. Order. Order. The Member for Hume, when the House comes to order, when we have order, we'll hear from the Member for Cunningham.
Thank you, Speaker. My question is to the Minister for Workplace Relations. While the Albanese Labor Government's agenda is helping Australians to earn more and keep more of what they earn, are there any risks that would cause them to have to work longer for less?
Give a call to the Minister for Employment, Industrial Relations and the Minister for the Arts.
Thanks very much, Mr. Speaker. And I thank the member for Cunningham with a question that draws together all the threads of the last few weeks. Because, indeed, you go through the three parliamentary sitting weeks we've had, and we had the first two where the legislation went through, first the Senate and then the House, for people to be able to earn more. And we have this week where the legislation has gone through the Senate for people to be able to keep more of what they earn. And against all of that, when we had the first legislation for people to earn more, those opposite were really angry about it and voted against it. On the tax cuts, those opposite voted for it, but were still really angry about it. Angry about it to the extent that, have a look at the amendment. The amendment that they voted for in the House and in the Senate, which said that what we should have was a reform package that is, and I quote, in keeping with the Stage 3 tax cuts. That would mean 84% of people get a tax hike. That's what that would mean. And they all voted for it here in the House and again in the Senate for 84% of Australians to get a tax hike. But the commitment from those opposite is that they will come on people's rights at work. They will come forward with a targeted package of repeals. That's how they've described it. No one said they had to use the word targeted, but that's how they've described it. And we know that means they will target people's wages. That means they will target people's job security. They will target safety at work. And we know from the last week they'll target the measures that have been delivering a closing of the gender pay gap. But the first policy that they've decided is the worst of all the ideas. The first policy that they've committed that they'll take to the next election is to undo the right to disconnect. The particular policy that allows people to have some time off. The policy that is now law that says when you're not being paid, you don't have to work. There are forms of engagement for workers in world history where that principle didn't apply. But generally it is accepted. If you're working, you're meant to be paid. But while they'll oppose the right to disconnect for workers, I'll tell you what, it's a right that the Leader of the Opposition is willing to take for himself. Because if it's anything about the cost of living, he'll exercise his right to disconnect. If it's about getting wages moving, he'll disconnect. If it's about rights for casuals, he'll disconnect. And if it's about being allowed any time off at all, the right to disconnect is there for the Leader of the Opposition. He'll disconnect from anything that improves the rights of Australian working people, but always to take that right to disconnect for himself and allow it for no one else.
Give the call to the member for Indi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
My question is to the Prime Minister. This week I introduced my End Pork Barrelling Bill. My bill would stamp out the practice of the major parties using taxpayer money to win votes. More than 80% of Australians think this is corrupt conduct. They're sick of it and they want to see it end. Prime Minister, do you agree that pork barrelling is corrupt conduct? And will you commit to working with me to stamp it out?
Give the call to the Prime Minister.
I thank the member for Indi for her question, and I appreciate the work that the member has undertaken and her very strong and long-standing interest in ensuring that taxpayers' money is effectively managed through these grants programs. The member for Indi was a very strong supporter of the creation of a National Anti-Corruption Commission. And one of the first acts of my government was to introduce the legislation, to carry the legislation, to put it in place, and it is now up and running, effectively funded, effectively operating out there. An important piece of legislation where we caught up with what most states and territories had done some time ago. I am aware of the Minister's bill that she has introduced into the Parliament. We'll go through this like any other piece of private members' legislation or senators' legislation in the usual methodical way that we do, following proper process. The Finance Minister, I can inform the member for Indi, has asked her department in the other place, the good senator, has asked her department for advice to strengthen the Commonwealth Grants framework, including possible enhancements to the Commonwealth Grants rules and guidelines to improve integrity, accountability, probity and transparency. As part of this work, recommendations that have been put forward by the Australian National Audit Office and the JCPAA in this place, the Joint Committee, in relation to grants are being considered. Enhancements to the Grants framework are under consideration, and the Finance Minister will be making announcements once they are finalised.
Give the call to the Honourable Member for Fraser.
My question is to the Minister for Financial Services. How can a lack of financial advice harm consumers already impacted by cost of living? And what is the Albanese Labor government doing to protect consumers from this?
Give the call to the Minister for Financial Services and the Assistant Treasurer.
Thanks, Speaker. And can I thank the outstanding member for Fraser for his question? Can I take the opportunity to acknowledge his work, the outstanding work he's doing as the chair of the House Economics Committee,
order.
A steady hand,
Member for O'Connor.
A steady hand, particularly on particularly difficult issues that they're dealing with, particularly around insurance affordability and the claims handling. So I pay tribute to the great work he's doing. Now, it's true that the Albanese government wants Australians to earn more money and keep more of the money that they earn. And if they're able to save that money or invest that money, we want to ensure that that money is kept safe. Because we understand you can't keep people safe unless you're keeping their money safe. And unfortunately, Deputy
Order.
Speaker, when we came into government, the place was in a complete mess. Losses to
Order.
Scammers had doubled again, because the members opposite thought if somebody lost their money to scammers, they were mugs. Well, we take a different view. We understand that these are sophisticated international criminal gangs and we've got to go
Order.
After them. They're accessing that information on Facebook or Instagram, publishing criminal material, taking innocent Australians' money, left to run wild by members opposite. Well, we're going after them.
Order.
Now, of course, one of the reasons
member
that Australians have been accessing that information from Facebook or Instagram is because under members opposite, under their government, we had fewer and fewer and fewer doors for people to get financial advice from, because under their watch, 12,000 financial advisers left the industry. No new entrants came in. They are asleep at the wheel. We're changing all of that because we understand not only have we got to crack down on the scammers, but we've got to ensure that there are safe doors for Australians to enter to get good information and good advice and expert advice that they can rely on to keep their money safe. So we've got a program of work which is rolling out expert advice, from, including from the member for Fraser, informing government policy, well received by industry. And I want to take the opportunity to give a shout out to members on the crossbench who have also engaged with me on this. A number of the new members to parliament on the crossbench have engaged with me on this, and I thank them for their engagement because it's been very useful in the formulation of our policy. And I'd also say to members of the opposition that I'd be willing to engage with them on these issues. But today is 299 days since they had a spokesperson for financial services or consumer
order
affairs.
The 299 days.
It shows they
concluded.
Are.
Resume your seat. The Leader of the Opposition has the call.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, the Immigration Minister is a disaster. His decisions have put Australians at risk.
Order. The. No.
Statement of fact.
The Attorney-General yelling during a question is highly disorderly, and you are warned. Out of respect for the Leader of the Opposition, he'll begin his question again.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, the Immigration Minister is a disaster. His decisions have put Australians at risk, and women in Victoria are alleged to have been sexually assaulted. 149 hardcore criminals.
The member will stop. The member for Jagga Jagga will leave the chamber under 94A. There is to be no interjections during questions. I'm not sure what's the hard part about that. The Leader of the Opposition will continue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. 149 hardcore criminals have been released into the community. The Minister has not taken a single application to re-detain one of these criminals, and now more Australians are being harmed, with the likely risk extending to many more Australians. When will you show leadership? Stop being so weak and sack this minister.
The call to the Prime Minister.
We are not in a position to defy an order of the High Court.
Order. Order. Members on my left.
And no one is suggesting that they should do that. Not my words. Not my words. The words of Senator Patterson. Under the Constitution, you can't detain someone indefinitely. We accept that. Not my words, the words of the Leader of the Opposition. The High Court's made the decision. We respect that decision. Not my words, the words of the Shadow Minister for Immigration. The fact is,
order.
The fact is, I'll tell you what is not strong. I'll tell you what strength is not. Strength is not asking for responses that would endanger judicial processes. That is not strong.
Order.
That is not strong.
Order.
There is no strength
on my left.
Whatsoever in that.
Order.
And what is appalling
Morton.
Is that the Leader of the Opposition knows that that is the case, knows full well that that is the case, because he has been in a position, including when he was responsible for the legislation of which our legislation was based upon, his legislation that he presided over, and he knows
order.
That that is the case.
Order. Give a call to the Honourable Order. The House comes to order. We'll hear from the Honourable Member for Robertson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And my question is to the Minister for Health. What actions has the Albanese Labor government taken to make it easier for Australians to see a doctor? And why is Medicare bulk billing fundamental to a strong Medicare? And why is the government so determined to strengthen Medicare after a decade of cuts and neglect?
Call order. Give a call to the Minister for Health and Aged Care.
Thanks, Speaker, and thanks to the member for Robertson for that question. He argued so passionately in this place for Labor's bigger, better tax cuts, which passed the parliament this week and will deliver a tax cut on July 1st to every single one of the 66,000 taxpayers in his electorate. Like a third-year registered nurse at the Gosford Hospital who will receive a tax cut of more than $1,600, or about double what they would have got under the Morrison government plan. But he's also a huge supporter of bulk billing, Mr Speaker, what we on this side of the House describe as the beating heart of Medicare. We know bulk billing for GP visits in particular was in free fall when we came to government. The member for Robertson saw the consequences of that every day he worked at the Wyong and the Gosford hospitals as an emergency physician, because they came in the front door every single day. But that pressure on bulk billing that we encountered, Mr Speaker, was no accident. It was a deliberate policy of the former government, and in particular of the now Leader of the Opposition when he was the Health Minister. Remember, Mr Speaker, when he was Health Minister, he famously said there were too many free Medicare services, Mr Speaker. On Radio National back in August 2014, he said this, Mr Speaker. He said about 4 out of 5 services performed by GPs are performed for free, and that is too high. That is too high. A comment that will send a chill up the spine of every community that has a bulk billing rate of around 4 in 5 for GP services. And I think about a few of those communities. One of them is the electorate of Dunkley. A bulk billing rate of about 4 out of 5 free GP visits every single year, Mr Speaker. Bulk billing rate that has been increasing. Well, what is the Leader of the Opposition's plan to reduce a rate of bulk billing in Dunkley that he regards as too high? Well, we don't have to guess. We have to look at his record. We have to look at his record, because in his first budget he tried to abolish bulk billing altogether. His budget glossy said this, Mr Speaker: from the 1st of July, previously bulk billed patients can expect to contribute towards the cost of standard GP consultations, as well as hospital pathology and imaging services, Mr Speaker. When he couldn't get that through the parliament, he kicked off a years-long freeze to the Medicare rebate that ripped billions and billions of dollars out of general practice. Well, that's not our approach. Our approach tripled the bulk billing incentive, which increased the rate of bulk billing in Dunkley. We don't think it's too high. We want to keep it rising. It increased the bulk billing rate on the Central Coast by 4.5%. That's our plan for a stronger Medicare, Mr Speaker. But all that would be at risk if this man ever got his hands on Medicare again.
Give the call to the Honourable the Leader of the Opposition.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. Prime Minister, does the Minister for Immigration enjoy your full confidence?
Call to the Prime Minister.
Yes.
Order. Give the call. Order. We'll give the call to the Honourable Member for Boothby.
Thank you, Mr. Order. Speaker.
The Leader of the Opposition. Order. No, the House will come to order. The Member for Boothby deserves the respect of also being heard in silence, just as every other member does. So when the House comes to order, we'll hear from the member for Boothby.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Prime Minister. How is the Albanese Labor government providing Australians with help to buy a home, and how has this been received? What are the barriers to this help being provided?
Good question. Give a call to the Prime Minister.
Thanks very much, Mr Speaker. Well, we are indeed trying to do our best to help Australians to buy a home through our Help to Buy scheme. And I'm asked about how it's been received, shared equity schemes. And indeed, the Queensland LNP leader has said this: we will prioritise building an incentive framework to support home ownership, examining areas including first home owners grants as well as shared responsibility schemes. He's backed it in. Jeremy Rockliffe, the Tasmanian Premier, has said this: innovative programs like the successful My Home shared equity program, which helps Tasmanians build or purchase a property. So he's on board. Dominic Perrottet set up a scheme in New South Wales.
The Prime Minister will pause. The member for Deakin's been on a warning. He's been interjecting since then. He knows the place. He'll leave the chamber under 94A. And we won't have any more interjections. Otherwise, people will follow the member for Deakin. The Prime Minister has the call.
Thanks, Mr Speaker. The former Premier, Perrottet, said this: key workers, single parents and older singles will be able to have the security of home ownership on the government's equity share in a property. He was certainly on board. But not everyone's on board, Mr Speaker. Those opposite have a policy where they speak about having super for homes. But it has a bit of history. The former Prime Minister Turnbull said this: it was a thoroughly bad idea. That is not what the superannuation system is designed to achieve. Now, I know those opposite haven't always agreed with Malcolm, but on this occasion they did. The current leader of the Liberal Party said this: I think Malcolm Turnbull has got it right. It's not good policy, and I agree with him. You don't want to fuel the prices. The deputy leader said this: young people need their super for retirement, not to try to take pressure off an urban housing bubble.
Order. The deputy leader of the opposition.
The late shadow minister said this, the member for Deakin, who's left us. Inevitably, all you do is push up housing prices. But it's not just them, of course, because the Greens political party are also blocking this. The member for Griffiths said on Insiders, we have enough homes for people to live in, don't need any of that. But we went back to their 2022 election platform, and it says this: this is why the Greens will establish a shared equity ownership scheme. Now, notwithstanding the grandness,
members on my right.
But he then went on to say you shouldn't have to win a lottery to secure a home. But his own website says this, wait for this one. An example of the Greens' vision for housing in Brisbane is 2,000 homes available to any Brisbane resident and assigned by lottery. Well, order. You don't need a lottery, you just need good policy, Mr. Speaker. Yeah. And on that note, I ask that further questions be placed on the notice paper.